Okay, I think we're gonna get started here with our next speaker, Sandy Douglas, the Executive Vice President and President of the Coca-Cola North America. So I think it's very timely to have Sandy with us today, as we've seen certainly more rational pricing in North America over the last few quarters. Margins appear to be heading in the right direction, and Coke is making progress on its bottler refranchising here in North America. At the same time, secular headwinds around health and wellness continues to mount, and it may be a little bit too early to gauge whether we are seeing the payoff from all the incremental marketing that we're seeing here in the marketplace. So, with that, we'll hear a little bit from Sandy on the state of the industry, and then we'll open it for Q&A. Sandy?
Thanks, Judy, and good morning, everyone. It's nice to be with you all, and after I give a couple of opening remarks, we will switch and have a conversation and address as many of your questions as possible. I'm gonna provide an overview of North America, and I'll begin with this slide, which is our cautionary slide related to forward-looking statements. A schedule reconciling non-GAAP measures to GAAP results is also posted on our website. I think the headline is that the Coca-Cola business in North America is healthy. We are following a consistent strategy, and we're beginning to see really strong results. In 2014, we implemented the strategy, and we saw results sequentially improve through the year, finishing with a very strong fourth quarter. And building on that, our first quarter in 2015 was very strong. We grew organic revenue 10%. We generated non-alcoholic ready-to-drink value share increase for the 20th consecutive quarter. Our solid top-line growth, coupled with productivity initiatives and cycling higher input costs, enabled us to grow comparable currency-neutral profit before tax by 27% in the quarter, driven in large part by an increased investment in advertising. Now, the first quarter had six extra shipping days in it, so that positively impacted the quarter. Those 6 days will come out in the fourth quarter. But if you take the timing out, what you really saw in the first quarter was a continuation of the momentum from the fourth quarter, and we continue to see that result start, as you'll see in the Nielsen data, in the second quarter. So why are we achieving these results? It starts with core strategy and consistent strategy, one that we put in place several years ago and that we're focused on three pillars, the first of which is the most important, which is building strong, valuable brand franchises. Second, creating customer value. And finally, building the capability in our system and in the company to sustain and repeat our success. We know these are the levers that keep our brands and business growing and prospering, and the key metrics, I think, are important to stress because they create the balanced scorecard that keeps the strategy focused on growth. The top line, most important metric is revenue, sales dollars deposited in the bank. Generating revenue growth is the key to our business model. But we also measure two things to govern how we do that. One is incidence, which is a brand metric that measures the percent of people that have enjoyed that brand in the last month. And second is purchase transactions. That's when a consumer buys one of our packages in the marketplace from one of our customers. So revenue is the main metric, and the two drivers are incidence and transactions. Then we measure margin growth, margin at the gross profit line, the operating profit line, and the economic profit line. And our job is to drive that consistently over time, and we have a significant opportunity here. And then finally, value share. How are we doing in the marketplace versus our competitors? We build our brands through effective marketing. Ours is very much a marketing-driven business. And experience has shown that when we don't have great marketing and advertising, or we don't have sufficient weight, our business suffers. And alternatively, when we do marketing the right way with the right weight, our business grows. So at the outset of 2014, we committed, and North America in some respects led the company here in the early stages of the turnaround plan that we put in place, but we sharply improved and invested in our brand marketing, and the results are beginning to pay off strongly. As a part of that, we test and rigorously review all of our marketing execution to see what works to build the brands, to grow incidents, to grow transactions and revenue. And then we bet on the winning work. And it's through that effort of quality and quantity of marketing that you hear us talk about that we're beginning to see strong results in North America and increasingly around the world. Secondly, we're implementing strong marketing programs like our activities, for example, around ESPN's Game Day, which is tied to the fall college football program, and also our innovative Share a Coke program, which for the second year is being implemented in the USA. In the last week, actually, the program began with many more names, packages, and promotional activities, and we are confident that this year's execution of Share a Coke will be even stronger than last year's program. And then a third and important marketing vehicle for us is activating key brands around passion points and properties like FIFA or the Olympic Games next year in Brazil, or with well-known celebrities like Jennifer Aniston for Smartwater and LeBron James for Sprite. I mentioned improved advertising and strong programs and activations, but there's also an essential part of our strategy, which you hear Ariel Finan and I talk about each quarter when we do the conference call, which is the what we call the occasion brand price pack channel architecture. This is a merchandising system, and in some respects, is the biggest news in the way the company is really overhauling and re-merchandising our sparkling beverage category. For many years, this category was about cans and large bottles, and the key metric was gallons sold. And that had run its course. Many of you have seen and heard people talk about the secular decline in carbonated soft drinks. And the primary reason for it was is these packages were too big, and the research, given that we were paid by our bottlers in gallon sales, was all about how would you like your larger package. And today, the consumer's just been clear as a bell. What they want is smaller packages. They want innovative packages, and they want packages with utility and brand specialness. And so we have been giving them what they want. We now get paid by our bottlers as a percentage of their revenue, not by the gallons they buy from us. And so we are linked at the hip at following the consumer where the consumer wants to go. And as you can see on the chart, the consumer is voting very strongly. 11% growth in volume and 16% growth in dollar value from these smaller, more proprietary packs represents a big change to a big category and a tremendous long-term opportunity as this smaller part of the business grows strongly into the future, while the older part of the business, which was heavily discounted and commoditized, becomes smaller. And while it's a work in progress, it's a bullish work in progress because the growth is clear, and it proves once again that in the beverage category, if the consumer is boss and you follow the consumer effectively and quickly, there's tremendous growth potential in beverages. So looking at sparkling, the charts that you see here, you see that there's a significant improvement in the sparkling category in terms of revenue performance. And we see these positive trends for our brands, led by our largest brand, the largest brand in the category. In addition, we're seeing transaction growth. I mentioned the tension of metrics of incidents and transactions, so that this is not just a function of price, but a function of sales and execution as well. And we're very optimistic that the beginning of this story is happening, but the long-term potential of it is really, really great. However, accelerating our value growth in sparkling is only part of the picture. It's an important part of the picture, but it's only part of it. We continue to build a scaled and more profitable stills portfolio. For the last decade in North America, we have focused on both internal brand building as well as acquisition to build the fastest growing stills beverage business in the United States. Our still beverage portfolio has grown sales at retail significantly since 2010, as shown by its 5% compounded annual growth rate. We're enhancing our strong positions in well-established categories through excellent marketing and in-store merchandising. We're also establishing footholds in high-growth and emerging categories and this includes our partnership with select milk producers to introduce Fairlife Milk in the value-added dairy arena. We're very encouraged by first quarter performance in this area as well, as total still brand portfolio value grew by 6% in Nielsen all measured channels, led by double-digit growth for Gold Peak, Honest Tea, and Smartwater, as well as high single-digit for Dasani and Simply. And then finally, talking about the major capability initiative of the company is the refranchising of the U.S. bottling system. We're making important moves, and the refranchising process is picking up pace as we change and strengthen our bottling system to make it more agile, modern, and customer-focused. The recent news is that we've transferred several territories in the first quarter and at the beginning of the second quarter. We're slightly ahead of schedule to transfer Chicago and Central Florida in the second quarter. That's 5% more of the bottle can business. We've signed new letters of intent that we've recently announced to refranchise another 5%, so that by the end of the year, we will have refranchised 15% of U.S. bottle can, or about 20% of the CCE volume that we acquired. And stay tuned. We have more of this coming as we pick up pace in the important transition of the U.S. system back to a fit-for-purpose, restructured system with scaled product supply, scaled IT, scaled customer management, shared services, and procurement, but then the strongest local Coca-Cola bottling companies doing what they do, building our brands and communities around the country every day. So there we are. We're active on every meaningful front of the business. The results are beginning to take shape. We have a consistent and disciplined strategy to drive revenue through a very careful combination of price and volume and brand building. And we have a capability agenda that we believe has started to throw off year-over-year consistent improvement in operations around the country, all making the future, we believe, for our business very strong going forward. So, Judy, I think that covers the prepared part. Maybe we can do some questions.
Yeah, thank you. And certainly feel free to email questions through events@gs.com with hashtag staples. I'll start with a few, and then we'll see if we get audience engaged this time. But I think there's a pattern here. I've been asking a lot of our participants just the state of the consumer here in the U.S. We have gas prices down, employment trends getting a little bit better. So how is this affecting Coke's business in North America?
Well, I think the consumer is positive but still a little nervous. Gas prices are down. That positively impacting the business in convenience stores for sure. Food away from home is seeing some resilience. But there's just uneasiness that the positives won't stay. And so you're not, I think it's still to be played out what consumers do with their spending money and how the jobs picture plays out. And then I think there's always uneasiness about some of the political activity. And so I think for enduring confidence to take place, we need a little bit more stability. But it's certainly an improved picture than, say, a year ago.
Mm-hmm. So you talked a lot about the price pack architecture being really a core part of your strategy. We've heard this for a few years now. So I'm just wondering, from your perspective, and you came back to head North America, what's different this time around, and what is the sustainability and the duration of how much is there more in terms of this price pack architecture-driven strategy?
Yeah, I mean, if you look, I think you can, and we're talking mostly about carbonated soft drinks now, there's really the category that was, and then there's the category that will be. And the category that was three packages with very significant price elasticity, because basically everybody was running the same packaging, and there was tremendous promotional pressure that had built up over time. And we had a business model of being paid for syrup gallons, and that made us push to increase package sizes because that's how you maximize that. The consumer is voting. I mean, the clarity with which consumers are communicating to us that they want smaller packages is overwhelming. And just think about it from a mom's perspective, the mini cans, which others in the industry have as well. Purchase intent from moms for that 100-calorie package is 25% higher than a 12-ounce can. Now, not everyone will buy it at first, but think of where that puts a mom. A mom can give a mini can as a reward to a teen and use it as a treat, and it's the right size, it's 100 calories, it's not a big investment of calories, and it gets finished, it doesn't get wasted. Whereas today, the packaging that we were using before would be half drunk, it would be all over the house, and that was irritating. And that piece of friction is as much as anything a reflection of the way we were running the category. And as we see the penetration and frequency for the small packs take root, and at the same time we try to address some of the really, really low, heavily discounted commodity packages through proactive pricing, we're able to bring the category more in line with the value that it should be generating. And we think that runway has got a long way to go because the packages that consumers want are still fairly low in the percentage of mix. And I think there's many years to go, assuming we stay disciplined and we have strong consumer demand from our marketing. So
what is the mix today? What was it a year ago? And if you think about the journey, are we in the second inning, third inning? How should we think about the timing under which you can really accelerate this shift in a more meaningful way?
Well, the mix of the smaller packs is still single digit. But I think we're in the first or second inning. I don't think we're late at all. The acceleration is going to be consumer-driven because it's not going to be price-driven. We're going to hold the pricing architecture and make sure the packages all fit. Now, clearly, bottlers are focused on those packages because they are growing, because they generate decent margins for the system and for our customers, but also because they present a new way of getting our incidence growing again for the first time in a number of years. And so I see it as a process of following the consumer and doing what the consumer wants, and I think that has a long way to go before we'll have maximized the opportunity.
So you're addressing the packaging sizes and the consumer's willingness to really go smaller as opposed to bigger. There's obviously the other part of the equation in terms of the health and wellness issues in terms of the artificial sweetener, people wanting fresh and organic and all the natural ingredients that the consumers are really migrating towards. So can you talk about your strategy in addressing that part of the equation through innovations like Fairlife or, you know, Coke Life? So just in terms of how much of that is focused on that part of the equation as opposed to really the pack sizes?
Sure. I mean, health and wellness is a major enduring trend. And each brand has to compete in that environment. So for Coke, smaller package is the perfect change for that environment. And consumers who were looking to have more portion control and to manage their calories, but they just love Coke, a smaller pack is a health and wellness decision that they can make, whether it's for themselves or their children. Otherwise, we're obviously taking actions with new brands like Coke Life all the way across into our stills portfolio to have the brands across organics, natural sweeteners, juices, value-added dairy is our new program in that category. And the whole strategy is to make sure that we are building big, valuable, enduring brands in each of the categories that consumers are willing to buy. And to be able to refresh that consistently for growth.
So speaking of Fairlife, there's a couple of questions on Fairlife here by email. So can you share with us in terms of how Fairlife performed year-to-date? What stages are you in terms of testing and distribution and consumer uptake? And maybe your thoughts on Fairlife versus plant-based beverages, and is that one area where eventually you also migrate towards as well?
Well, Fairlife's off to a great start. Retail reaction to it has been very strong. Consumer reaction and trial is ahead of expectations. I think the neat thing about Fairlife is the idea was brought to us by dairy farmers. sustainable dairy farmers who had a vision for dairy farmers and particularly cow's milk to compete more effectively in value-added dairy. And the proprietary idea was brought to us through our Venturing and Emerging Brands group. We partnered up with them and are working with them, and it's an interest to the entire dairy industry that they're able to compete more against some of those agricultural products that have been sort of alone in the value-added part of the dairy category. And we just think it's a great product, and we're happy to be partnered with those guys.
Any quantitative metrics in terms of distribution uptake?
Yeah, I mean, we're hitting our distribution numbers. I think national retail availability is in the well over 50%. But it's a new brand. New brands are all about awareness and trial, and they have to be nurtured and developed. Simply Juices was a major new brand in the juice category, and it took us a number of years to build it and nurture it and grow it, and Fairlife, I think, will be the same.
I saw it in the store just this past weekend. It was positioned right between organic and conventional. Is that kind of the strategy in terms of the positioning within?
I think so. I mean, different retailers are doing different things, but we clearly would want it to be near the value-added side of the category and to have that basis. And we think consumers who are looking for more protein and healthier products will buy it and enjoy it. It tastes great.
Okay. Just shifting gear a little bit in terms of a couple of the equity investments that you've made in Monster and Keurig. On Monster, I think we're waiting for the deal to close and see how much of that will really change in terms of the distribution opportunity in specialty and vending channels here in North America. So if you can just comment on, you know, what you see as an opportunity for Coke to participate as you go forward. And then I think some of us will get to see the Keurig Cold for the first time this week. Your thoughts on the launch and how much excitement is there within the Coca-Cola company to really see this new platform take off?
Yeah, on the Monster program, we're extremely excited about that. I think Monster is a premier marketer. They're very innovative in the energy space, and they represent a perfect global partner for our system to participate, compete, and succeed in the energy category. But we also get to have and take advantage of their very strong culture and their capability at building energy businesses, which we candidly think is superior to ours. So I think from an energy category perspective, it gives our system worldwide a winning plan, and certainly in the U.S. On Keurig Green Mountain, we're very excited about Keurig Cold. We have been doing work to understand the at-home manufacturing opportunity for a number of years, and dated back to my earlier days in Coke. We've tried several times ourselves to come up with ways to put fountain machines or other kinds of manufacturing units in homes, and not very successfully. And what Keurig brings is a strong technology capability and a vision that they've paid off in HOT. And so we're excited to be in the front seat with them on Keurig Cold. We think it's innovative. Brian and his team have a lot of research, and they'll tell you about what they think the potential is. We're just glad to be on the front seat of it and learning with them and contributing to the potential of the opportunity.
Okay. There's a question here also in terms of the Keurig platform, in terms of the importance of that platform as really a way to drive price and mix improvement, particularly in the mix side, because potentially you have another packaging format that delivers sort of that premiumization and price points that consumers may migrate towards. So how does that help your packaged beverage platform?
Yeah, my view is that it's the analogy that Muhtar will draw is that it is sort of like the freestyle machine in the sense that it creates a variety incubator and innovation area. We'll start out with some of our largest brands simply because we're going to help create scale. But I see it as an opportunity for innovation and an opportunity for products that might not be available in other formats. And we think it will generate favorable mix. It'll generate revenue because it'll be sold at a premium. But the bigger idea is being able to grow with the consumer for people who like to order their groceries online and create theater in their homes. And we just think there's a lot of potential on multiple levels.
Talk about the refranchising a bit. It looks like the pace is starting to pick up more. So just update on the markets where you've transitioned distribution. What are some of the metrics that you're looking at that gives you confidence that that was the right strategy? And just in terms of the updated thoughts on the production, obviously that's currently within the Coca-Cola Company. What is the timeline of when we should start to see the ownership change in that part of the business?
Well, the refranchising strategy, we're incredibly confident in it. The power of family-owned local Coca-Cola bottlers being close to their communities and executing a beverage marketing effort in towns across the U.S. is evident in the one-year, the three-year, the five-year, the 10-year, and the long-term performance of the business. In every one of the 50 states, the high per capita market is over 100% bigger than the low per capita market. And that's because a long time ago, there were 1,350 bottlers going out and back with a horse-drawn cart each day. And some of them were great, and some of them weren't. And you would have thought in the age of big retail that that would have narrowed, but it hasn't actually. And the development of this business is very, very local. And so we needed to take the full advantage of that capability with very strong bottlers, new and existing, growing their territories, while at the same time rewriting the franchise contract for the 21st century. So no market or products can afford wasted costs. So the manufacturing system, I'll come back to your second part on that, but there has to operate at lowest optimal cost. Single IT system, single shared services, single procurement, single large customer management with scale, because our large retail customers don't want to deal with 70 bottlers. They want to deal with a strategic entity that can make decisions. So we've built a new and proprietary model for those scale issues, and then we're taking full advantage. And the metrics that we're watching are the same metrics that I shared earlier. And with only one exception, and that was in a very rural territory with its own unique challenge, we've actually picked up speed of growth on day one after the conversion to the new bottlers. And that's because there's tremendous energy in the bottlers to demonstrate that they are, in fact, the right model and they're investing and doing the right thing. So very strong commitment to that, and you will see our pace pick up. But our pace will go at the speed of the implementation of the ERP system, which precedes the conversion, and it will be very sure-handed because our customers deserve it, our consumers deserve it, and the people that work for us deserve it. So faster pace for sure, but it's not a switch that we're going to flip because we're building an enduring competitively advantaged system. On manufacturing, the strategy is decided. We are going to run a nationally organized and governed product supply system with lowest optimal cost. And the reason why we use the word optimal is because innovation needs to occur. One of the strengths of bottlers is that they invent new packages, and most of our good packaging ideas come from bottlers. And it makes sense. They're close to the market, and they develop new ideas. Who owns and operates that will depend on the tightness of the governance. And we are working collaboratively with the bottlers to finalize that, and we'll announce it when it's ready.
So there's a question here about your recent adoption of the One Brand strategy, I think more globally. What consumer insights have Coke to move forward with that strategy? Are you anticipating any effect in North America? And is this something that really could drive incremental growth for the portfolio as a whole? And will you expand this into other parts of your sparkling portfolio?
Yeah. We have in Europe and a couple other international markets piloted the One Brand strategy. And really what we're learning about is what's the best way to grow the Coke trademark. Is it with five versions marketed as one brand and you choose the one that best fits your needs? Or are you better off marketing Coke and Diet Coke and Coke Zero separately, building independent equities for them with different positioning targets? Which one drives the most margin growth? Which one drives the most revenue growth, incidents, transactions, et cetera, same metrics? We haven't read all those pilots yet. We're very much in a learning mode. Marcos Di Quinto, who's our new Chief Marketing Officer, is overseeing that, and that's the best of the Coke system, is to try strategies, learn from them, tailor them, and ultimately leverage them across the world. A good example of that is Share a Coke. Share a Coke was invented in Australia. It's turned out to be a gigantic, successful global platform. It's been tweaked, learned about, and we're in a very rapid state of learning from each other. And some markets around the world are in their third year. USA is in the second year. So you got a lot of different things being learned about, and the one brand strategy is just another example.
And within it, just in terms of the diet challenge that you've had, obviously the segment of the category that's been under more pressure, it seems to be recovering a little bit. Maybe it's the comparison issue, but just your thoughts on there, and Pepsi's decided to take aspartame off of Diet Pepsi. You're not doing that. So just in terms of what are you seeing from a consumer insight perspective?
Yeah, I think the big picture there is diet products and frozen products have really suffered over the past few years, and particularly diet frozen products. There's a consumer flight to fresh, which is a good thing. It's a good thing for diets. It's a good thing for health. But that's impacted things that are called diet and things that are frozen. Diet Coke is a terrific brand. And it's, I keep saying it's work in progress, but the reason why I say that is that we don't have the revenue growing. It is better, as you saw in the chart. Its decline has moderated, but that's not the picture of success. Our view is that Diet Coke's principal equity is great taste. We're going to be very careful before we change the taste of it. But we follow the consumer. Consumers telling us, don't change Diet Coke. We love it just the way it is. But at the same time, there's a lot of junk science and alarmism around low and no-calorie sweeteners that we have to address. And most importantly, we have to ask third parties to help us address it. Because in the end, low and no-calorie sweeteners are 100% safe. We would never sell an ingredient in one of our products that wasn't safe. And so we are going to continue to tell that story. We will continue to work on a number of loyalty tactics and other programs that help consumers get more value out of Diet Coke. And it's my view that Diet Coke will start to grow revenue again. And as it relates to what our competitors are doing, that's what makes our industry great, and we'll see how that goes.
Okay. I have a ton more questions, but I think we're out of time here. So thank you, Sandy, for coming back to our forum, and we'll have our next presentation here for Constellation. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.